It is very good afternoon. It is Niall Boylan with you for the next hour or so. And I want you to get involved in the show. Don't forget any stage. If you do want to get involved in the show, please text us at 085 122 55. So do text us at 085 122 55. We're having a slight problem with our WhatsApp at the moment, but we will have that back up again by the end of the day. Now, I wanted to do something a little bit different today. There's so much in the news. I suppose we could talk about the Kamala and Trump debate last night. I don't know whether you stayed up. As you notice, my eyes are quite bleary. Yeah, I did stay up to watch it. I thought she did better than I expected, but I thought she was a little bit unhinged. Somebody obviously told her, stare at Donald Trump constantly in a condescending manner, and she went and overdid it completely and looked like a complete stalker and nutcase. He, I think, was more focused. She did draw him in once or twice. He got a bit angry and made a few mistakes. Maybe the cats and dogs thing, although, by the way, wrongly fact-checked by ABC, because it was in the news that immigrants, by the way, in Springfield seemingly did kidnap people's dogs and cats, but he probably shouldn't have brought it up in a presidential debate. Overall, according to the polls, they're suggesting he did win the debate. She's asked for a second debate and he said no, and the reason he said no is because he says she clearly lost the first one. That's why she wants a second one. There's been lots of suggestion that she was looking at notes. Now, I don't know. I'm sure they're both checked before they walk in, although she did seem to be flicking pages at one stage where he never looked once down. He never looked at her once either, which was obviously his part of his strategy. But it was an interesting debate nonetheless. She had a lot to say about nothing. She talked about the 50 grand for businesses and the 6 grand for families about 400 times and really didn't have any policies whatsoever, whereas he seemed to have. So he did seem more focused. She seemed quite erratic, although she behaved reasonably professionally in saying that she constantly went on the attack from start to finish. I think, personally speaking, I believe, and I know I'm biased because I'm a Trump fan, but I think she came across as being completely unhinged. And anybody who would vote for her obviously would be equally unhinged. Because clearly she would destroy the country. She refused to answer questions like, would you agree with a late-term abortion up to birth? She refused to answer other questions in relation to border control. She refused to answer many questions, which was predicted, by the way, that she wouldn't go off script and that she would stick to her own script no matter what she was asked. ABC were clearly biased because when she refused to answer those questions, they didn't press her on them. But 32 times, according to the statistics, they pressed him on questions they asked her. They only pressed her twice. So clearly there was bias by ABC, but then again, we're quite used to media bias when it comes to Donald Trump. Overall, I think he won the debate, and according to the polls, some of the polls, they're neck and neck, but the real polls that count, the ones that have been accurate in the past that say that normally the Democrats have a 4% drop in whatever the polls suggest, would suggest that he is ahead. Let's say, good luck in November. Let's hope we see what happens. I think for the sake of the world, no matter what you think of Donald Trump, I think anything would be better than having Kamala Harris as the President of America. Now, I want to move on from that, something a little bit different. And I got an email from somebody. It says, hi, Niall, I'm a huge fan of your podcast and show. I've been listening for a while. I never thought I'd be writing in, but I really needed some advice, and I hope you can help me. I've been with my husband, Liam, for the last 6 years now. Maybe I shouldn't mention his name. About 2 years ago, he was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And since then, things have changed dramatically. He's had good days where everything feels almost normal. But when he has lows, he really has lows, and it's hard to manage. He becomes withdrawn, irritable, and sometimes even shuts me out completely. When he's manic, it feels like I'm dealing with a stranger, impulsive, erratic, and sometimes even reckless. I love him so much, and I've tried everything to support him and being supportive. I've gone to therapy sessions with him, researched on how to help him, and even made sure he stays on his medication. But it's getting to the point where I feel like I'm losing myself in the process. His mental illness takes up so much of my space and takes up so much space in our relationship that I'm constantly walking on eggshells, never knowing when the next episode will hit. I don't want to leave him when he's struggling, but I also don't know how much longer I can keep going like this. I feel guilty for even thinking about walking away, but the emotional toll is becoming overwhelming. I'm scared that if I stay, I'll continue to sacrifice my own happiness constantly, but leaving him feels like abandoning him when he needs me the most. I've spoken to many friends about it, and some of my girlfriends told me I'm still young, I should get out and find a man that will make me happy, that unfortunately he's going to have to deal with his demons for the rest of his life, but I shouldn't have to deal with them as well. Do you have any advice on how to balance loving somebody with mental illness while still protecting your own mental health as well? Is there a point where you have to just say, enough is enough? Thanks, Kate. It's an interesting one, isn't it? What do you do when somebody suffers from a mental health problem, i.e. bipolar, depression, whatever it is, and things are not getting better, and they're probably not going to get better? I mean, do you stick it out? Because after all, they will bring you down as well. And that's the sad part about it. Because obviously your life becomes unhappy too. Is there a point you have to get to where you say, or you make a decision that if this doesn't get better at a certain point, and I've seen a psychologist say this before, a while ago, you know, if you give them all the help you can and they're not willing to help themselves, you get to a point where you say, okay, if it's not better, say by, you know, March next year, that's my D-Day, I'm leaving. Even though I love them, I have to do something for myself because I can't get myself dragged down this rabbit hole. Or are you one of those people who believes in sickness and in health when you marry somebody till death do us part, that you stay with them forever? Well, let us know what you think, by the way, by texting 085 122 55. I will ask you to text today, by the way, not to WhatsApp. So please text 085 122 55. Let me go to Tommy. Tommy, hi, how are you?
Good morning, all you well?
Good morning, Tommy. I don't know whether you watched the debate last night. I shouldn't talk about it, I suppose, because that's not what we're talking about, but it was interesting nonetheless. it was entertainment. Tommy, what should she do in this situation?
Well, who does she want to please? Herself or God? That's something.
Your phone line is a bit low, Tommy. Are you on a speaker?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Oh, I can hear you now, yeah. I can hear you now.
Yeah, it's up to herself whether she wants to please herself or she wants to please God. So if she wants to please God, it's in sickness and in health. It sounds like the guy's only diagnosed 2 years, but he's obviously been bipolar for a while.
Yeah, you don't just catch bipolar. Obviously, there had been problems and he obviously went and got diagnosed, yeah.
Now, is she exaggerating his symptoms because he's been diagnosed and she's looking out for him more? I don't know. Our friends that are it's after two. I think she like one day she's going to be menopausal, which is just as hard as bipolar.
Mm-hmm.
So it's give and take. It's give and take. I don't know if there's kids involved. I'm always careful when I'm commenting on personal stories, but she did take a vow. She's there to support her husband. You get his name, but you also get his problems as well.
Yeah, but when you take a vow to marry somebody, you're marrying the person that you met at that time. Now, everybody knows people change over time and things change. And you know, you get the good and the bad. But when you're constantly getting the bad, you know what I mean? Unfortunately, if somebody has a serious mental health problem, be it bipolar or depression or whatever it is, and you're constantly getting the bad, that in turn can bring you down too.
Bipolar isn't constant.
Yeah, well,
it comes and goes.
Yeah, I understand that.
It's troughs and...
No, and nor is depression either, you know, although it's constantly there.
A marriage in general. So you have to take the rough with the smooth. Like I said, I think it's a bit early to be talking about leaving them and all that. I think she sounds overwhelmed, to be honest with you. A friend should be supporting her to make her marriage work instead of just saying leave the bastard. Because if the roles were reversed and he left for a younger woman because she's menopausal, you know where that goes.
Yeah.
The lady sounds overwhelmed. The man has to look after himself. He has to look after his diet, his mental health, exercise, all that. So maybe she could get involved and they could exercise together, maybe eat healthier, make sure he's taking his medicine. He also has a responsibility to be attractive to his wife, emotionally, mentally, and physically. So he obviously has to look after himself as well. He's only diagnosed 2 years as well, so he's probably struggling to come to terms with it. But I think it's way too early to be talking about separation or divorce. If I was her, I'd say, look, give it time, get involved, do it together, get family and friends involved. Take the stigma away from it. She's probably saying to herself, looking at him like he's kind of lacking masculinity. So, you know, give it time. But
she doesn't mention it, but we don't know in the relationship, you know, has this created other problems, i.e. lack of intimacy, all those other kind of things that can happen in a relationship when things go pear-shaped. So, you know, there could be other issues there. I mean, and look, there's no doubt it's quite difficult to deal with somebody whose mood changes on a regular basis. As you mentioned, for example, a woman who's menopausal, who's not getting the right type of treatment, for example, could be difficult to deal with too. And, you know, is he going to leave her when she becomes menopausal? Like, so... You know, you are right in that sense that you have to deal with the good and the bad.
Yeah, I wouldn't be too impressed with our friends. Just, you know, give it time, get as much support and give the man the chance he deserves. He gave her a name. He's given her financial security, I presume, because she hasn't mentioned that he's not working or anything like that. Like, so if she's going to have to stick it out in sickness and in health. And it depends how much she fears God. If she fears God, she'll stay with him for the rest of her life. But if she's going to put her happiness above God, well then she'll walk away. But that's her decision.
She said she said obviously regularly he becomes irritable and sometimes shuts me out completely. When he's manic, it feels like I'm dealing with a stranger, impulsive, erratic, and sometimes even reckless. So, I mean, that could be a dangerous situation, obviously, in a relationship. I understand how difficult it would be, but you believe he should stick, or she should stick with it?
Stick with it and get involved, and in a non-judgmental way, but in a supportive way, as he would be for her. It's like, you know, exercise together, eat healthy, and I guarantee you the marriage will bloom. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they have kids.
Doesn't mention that at all. Actually, to be honest with you.
No conversation yesterday about kids. Like, I wouldn't be promoting a couple splitting up.
Nor would I, unless you can't detest each other. I think parents have a duty to stay together for the sake of the kids, unless obviously they're fighting like cats and dogs, because that's the worst thing that could happen in a household where there's children. If they can stick each other and get on with each other and live as even housemates when you have kids, I believe people should stick together for the sake of the kids. But stay there for a second, Tommy. Let me go to Suzanne. Suzanne, hi. Suzanne Matches, how are you?
Hi, Noel. Morning. I just have a little mouth ulcer, so I hope I'm speaking correctly. No, Noel, this is a subject that I'm very passionate about, and I suppose I just have goosebumps thinking about the poor lady, because I know how difficult this can be, because I've just been praying in it in another life. But just saying, all there's two key things here. People that do suffer from bipolar can also veer into personality disorders, anxiety, depression, and the medication is really important. So my advice here would be, if this man is up and down, it's really important to constantly go back to the doctor to get the medication correct, because people can be diagnosed and then that particular medication may not work, and this should be done through a trained professional. So I couldn't stress highly enough to this lady, if she's feeling these ups and downs coming along, is straight back to the doctor and do some adjustments. That's one thing. The second thing I just want to say, the Mental Health Organization have fantastic support groups for both people suffering from bipolar disorder, anxiety, depression. They have support groups running every week.
I think she's doing that. I mean, she does say, I've tried everything to be supportive. I've gone to therapy sessions, researched how to help. I've even made sure he's on his medication. So she does seem to be doing everything she's supposed to be doing, but she said life is like walking on eggshells. And there does come... Now, I know you're a life coach yourself, Suzanne, and I'm sure people talk to you about these kind of things all the time, but there does come to a point where you can help somebody, but you can only help them so much. You know what I mean? And... Look, we all get one shot at this life. And if you're living with somebody who has made your life equally as dark as theirs because of their behavior, you know, I remember reading a psychologist report on this before. There is a time where you have to call it a day and, you know, and look after your own health.
Yeah, but then hold on. Like, she's talking about going to a therapist. Sitting with her husband going to a therapist is one thing. Going to the doctor. I'm just saying, to go through, it's only 2 years in, to go through all the avenues a few times. And I'm saying the support groups with the wear would be him going on his own, sitting with people who are suffering the same way as him. And they do offer peer-to-peer support, great support. So people in a group can go in feeling shite and then hear other people feeling shite and come out feeling a little bit better. Mm. But there's also support groups for her. So it's a bit like AA, it's a bit like any of the, you know, try every avenue first, because she's obviously feeling isolated. This is a new thing for her. She's married to this man. She loves him. My advice would be, seriously, doctor again, medication. If she's not going to AWARE, I'd strongly urge her to go in and give it a shot.
But how long? And I get all that. And there is wonderful help out there available, right? And sometimes there's a long waiting list to get some of that help. But in saying that, how long do you put up with it, Suzanne? How long do you deal with that situation in your own life before eventually it comes to a point where you have to say, make a decision? And this psychologist report that I read said that if you've tried everything and nothing is changing, for example, you know, for whatever reason, it's just not getting any better, that you have to set a date. In other words, and this was in relation to a man who suffered from clinical depression, right? And it was a wife asking the same question. And he said, well, you'll set a date, say, for 6 months away. You try everything in that 6 months. And if things don't show any sign of improvement and you're getting worse, because they obviously, you know, so you're living with somebody who suffers from depression, it can bring you down too. Of course, it's quite dark.
Yeah.
You know, that you set a date, and on that date you decide if things don't get better by that date and there's no more help, you know, in other words, they don't want to help themselves anymore, well, then I have to go.
Well, and there's a certain credibility to what you're saying, but again, I still think there's steps this couple are missing. There's other things they could try first. And Niall, it's a bit like, you know, terminal cancer. My sister, and I won't mention her name, had terminal cancer 7 years ago. She was in an awful stage. Her husband had cancer. Like, people are diagnosed in marriages. And like, I'm divorced, so I'm not for a minute saying you stay for the rest of your life. But there are certain things in life that you do support people through, because you marry somebody through sickness and in health, and things will pop up. Now, I know in this case it's different. So I'm going to hold the fence there to say, for me personally, I have seen and worked with people in this lady's situation before. I still think there's other steps she can revisit. I'd be banging down the doctor every single day.
But is there ever a point, Suzanne, I'm sorry for interrupting you, but is, as Tammy said, you know, okay, you can stay for God. In other words, you took your vows. But, you know, from a practical point of view, there has to be a point where, you know, enough is enough. And that's what she says at the end of the email. You know, do you have any advice on how to balance loving somebody with a mental illness while still protecting your own mental health? Is there any point where one has to say enough is enough? So I'm asking, like, Tammy, I think, is agreeing there is a point where you say enough is enough. But do you think there's ever a point where you say enough is enough?
Yeah, but I wouldn't be putting 9 months on it. I'd be working through what needs to be done now. And I wouldn't particularly be putting 9 months on it. But everybody has to protect themselves in a relationship. Even if it wasn't bipolar, you could be married to somebody who's a gambler. You have to make that decision. So I suppose what I'm saying, keep that decision away from the specifics of this bipolar piece. It's like any marriage. You marry somebody, you think you know them. And because I think it's kind of cruel in a way for anybody in a situation that's in any kind of addiction or bipolar or whatever, to say, if you don't fix yourself, I'm going to leave you.
However, it's equally cruel to live in that. Yeah, sorry, go ahead, yeah.
Yeah, if there was nothing going on and they just were incompatible, it would be a hell of a lot easier to say, if you don't change the way you treat me or the way you operate in the marriage, I'm going to leave you. I'm just saying, well, there's mental illnesses or illnesses. I think it's worth going through every step. I would just say to that lady, if she's listening, just give Aware a shot with the guy. Not one-to-one therapy, groups. And she could try the support groups. She might learn other tips from other people, women who've been living with people with bipolar for 5-10 years, who say, 4 nights a week, you need to go off and do your own thing. You need to go to yoga, Pilates, do something. I would just try that first. But I suppose to end and answer your question, like any relationship, if you marry somebody on certain terms and those terms change, of course you need to protect yourself too. You need to protect your own mental health, well-being too. But in this case, I'm sort of suggesting I give a really big shout out for Aware today and ask her and him to give it one shot for 6 weeks and see if it gives them any sort of respite at all.
Again, I don't know whether they've already done that or whether they've done those things. And the concerning part for me as well, sorry, just to come back to Tammy in this, is where she says, and sometimes he's even reckless. Now, I don't know what that means, because she doesn't go into detail. Reckless could mean gambling. Reckless could mean drinking too much. Reckless could mean domestic violence. Reckless could mean a lot of things. So, Tommy, you know, Suzanne says, you know, it's not as easy as just putting a date on it. And I think the only reason that psychologist said that was because if you don't put a date on it, you'll keep putting it off. So leaving aside God, Tommy, and I appreciate the point that you make, that you do make a marriage vow to God, but leaving aside that, the practicality of it, you know, is there a point where you say, Tommy, enough is enough?
Well, in Al-Anon, which is for partners of alcoholics, they say detach with love. When it comes to dealing with someone that's in addiction, you kind of have to just keep it in the day. You can't put, okay, in 6 months I'm going to leave them or this. It just comes a point where you just have to keep it into the day, and you go to support groups. But when the lady goes to the support group, there's one thing she has to be brutal with, and that is her honesty. She has to be honest. And She has to. I will never underestimate the power of getting back to some sort of spiritual guidance as well. I don't know if these support groups, but for both of them, if you look into that in the future, I believe that a strong belief in God, you can overcome everything. Might even fix everything, but you can definitely overcome it. But when it comes to support groups, you have to go regularly. You have to be brutally honest, and you have to put yourself out there, park the pride to the side, and take the advice and the love that's coming your way. They've a rocky road ahead of them. There's going to be ups and downs. There's going to be resentment. She's going to be like, oh, I have to go to classes now because you're sick. And he's going to be sitting there and he's like, everyone's making a big deal out of me. I'm fine. So there's going to be a lot of resentment and denial. But that will all work its way out through the support groups. I presume they use the 12 steps. I'm not sure. But I'd highly recommend a support group and looking for some tips.
Okay, well hang on, Suzanne, stay with me for a second if you can, okay? And thank you, Tommy. Suzanne believes that obviously you should stick it out, try to reach out to more support groups like AWARE and other ones like that, and ones that obviously help partners and spouses of people who are suffering from mental health problems, be it depression or bipolar, whatever it happens to be. And I know they're very different things, but in saying that, they can have the same devastating effect on a relationship. Nuala, hi, how are you?
Not too bad now. It's a difficult one there. But I think she needs an awful lot of support, because I think, say, like a husband whose wife, or the reverse case, has dementia, do you walk away because the person isn't the person you married and they might turn on you for no reason?
There's a difference. You can't manage dementia. Do you understand what I'm saying? It just gets considerably worse over time. But you can manage bipolar, you can manage depression with the right medication and the right support. So what I'm saying is, you know, you can live with those things. Unfortunately, with dementia, there's only one route, and that's to get worse as time goes on. Unfortunately, that very serious illness, obviously, as people get older. But it's a kind of different thing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But at the same time, she has to kind of see that she's a separate person. Otherwise, she falls into the depression herself. And like, if you really love somebody, and if you just walk away cold turkey, you're going to feel very guilty afterwards, and you won't really be open to happiness.
Well, let me give an example. I knew a guy, and his wife was an alcoholic, right? And he would regularly come home from work and find her on the floor of the kitchen with two empty bottles of wine on the ground, right? And the kids completely ignored and neglected, et cetera, right? There was two kids involved. And, you know, and he tried to get her help, went to AA, went to meetings, went to Al-Anon for himself and all of that. He'd done everything, went on for about 5 or 6 years. Now, she held down a job, by the way, in the civil service, a good job in the civil service, but constantly went to work pissed in the morning, drunk. I don't know how she managed to do it, but she seemed to function her way through work and then come home and start drinking again. Eventually, it got to a point where he had to leave her, because for his own health and for his own sake, he took the kids and he left her. And the courts awarded the kids to him because she was considered to be an unfit mother because she was an alcoholic. So what I'm saying to you is, there is a point.
Yeah.
And I've spoken to him, you know, many times since, and he doesn't regret the decision he made. He said she's still an alcoholic. Oh. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can understand that. I mean, he needed an awful lot of support and strength to take the steps he needed to take. You know,
all I'm saying to both you, to yourself and Suzanne, is I understand everything you're saying, and I agree. Get as much support as you can. Do everything you can. To me, from the email, it does sound like she's very supportive. It does sound like she wants to help. Yeah. It does sound like she's done a lot already. But maybe she sees no light at the end of the tunnel, like my mate with the alcoholic. And there comes a point where you have to just say, you know, and she seems quite young, by the way, unlike somebody who might be dealing with somebody with dementia. You know, she's very young. They're maybe only newly married in the last 5 or 6 years. I don't know. But her friends are saying she's still young, you know, and can still find happiness. Maybe it's got to a point where she just says, look, I cannot go on. I've only one life. I can't go on like this anymore.
And I get that, Niall. I get that, Niall. And I'm not for a minute saying it's cut and dried, but she is young. He's only been diagnosed in 2 years. And I just feel myself, through my own experience of dealing with people, the medication balance can take a number of years. So it's a little bit unlike AA or somebody who's alcoholic. It does alcohol. The medication, people can feel really good on bipolar. They can stop taking the medication. They have a spike. I just think there's a little bit of adjustment there. And I also feel, I think support groups are great. It's like even
talking about Donald Trump this morning, it's the election. If you're feeling frustrated, maybe she's done this and maybe it's a box ticked, but if she got herself into a support group with other people similar, she might just find she's not talking to her own friends about just leaving. People may say, you know, I went through a phase like that for 2 years. Now we're on an even plateau. I just think it's worth trying the few extra steps, and then she can look at herself in the mirror and say, I have done everything. Like your friend, there has to be a cutoff point, but at least she'll do it with love. And at the moment, she might get advice from a group now that says, you're too heavily involved in trying to help them. As that lady said, she may have to detach with love, get these things in place, detach a bit with love. But the most important thing is that when she does make that decision, she does it with love and she can move on happily. Because I feel at the moment somewhere, if she does it now, there's a little bit of doubt there and she may regret it.
So okay, well hang on. So, Nuala, just getting back to what people are talking about, marriage vows. I know the vows under God's rules mean an awful lot, but in practical terms, do they mean everything? In sickness, in health, you know, till death do us part. You know, I mean, that's a kind of tough ask sometimes, isn't it?
Oh, of course it is. Like love is something that it's not just like you're being in love and loving somebody is totally different. Like, you know, like I think it was even David Bowie that said that, because you can falling in love is very emotional and everything, but then later on you're dealing with a human being that is just as awkward as yourself, maybe.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean? Is true. Yeah.
And two people are trying to knit together, and they may come from different backgrounds, different houses. So it's a big challenge. I mean, for people who stay together, as a single person, I can see the challenges, you know, because I lived in community for a while and there's very few people, and there were the good people, but not, you couldn't pick one of them and say, gee, I wouldn't mind living with that person for a long time. We killed them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a big challenge to love somebody over a long period of time, because you come against...
Well, they do, because they change. Well, people change, you know.
Yeah. And you change too.
Yeah,
you know, I things I thought years ago, I wouldn't agree with them now. You know, so you do change over time. Both people do change over time. Some
people think people grow together. You know what I mean? And when they're, you know,
But
sometimes they can grow apart if they change differently. You know what I mean? You know, if it's in relation to say, I don't know, there's numerous ways people can change. Physically, they can change how they look, for example. You know, and people tend to fall in love with each other sometimes for physical reasons, because they like how somebody looks and they're physically and sexually attracted to them. And then that person changes and they can fall out of love with them. That can happen too. You know, they can be attached to the intimacy of the marriage and how they feel about the intimacy of the marriage. They can be attached to the camaraderie of the marriage and the friendship in the marriage more so. It depends on what you're looking for in a marriage. And if that person loses that quality at some point, well, then you feel like, oh, well, then the contract has been broken. I've been done here. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you said to say a man marries a woman hoping that she won't change, and a woman marries a man
to change him.
To change him.
Yeah, I've heard that. Yeah. Why do women want to change men? Men marry a woman because that's what they want. That's exactly what they want. But women marry men in the hope they can change them. Yeah, what's that all about?
I don't know. You know, because a man is seduced by his eyes and a woman by her ears.
Okay, a man is seduced by his eyes and a woman by her ears. Of course, absolutely, because you tell a woman all the right things.
The nice talk.
Yeah, the nice talk.
If he tells her he loves her and she's beautiful, then he thinks...
Is there ever a point, Nuala, you know, I said it to Tommy and Suzanne as well, is there ever a point when you're living with somebody who suffers, say, greatly with depression or mental health problems or bipolar, whatever, in this case, bipolar, is there a point where you have to say, save yourself? You know what I mean? And you go, I'm getting out of this. I'm getting as bad now. I'm suffering from depression now because I'm living with this, the horror of this. So is there a point where you have to say, I'm out of here?
Well, I'd say if your own mental health is deteriorating badly, I think you would have to, you'd have to take some steps, because it wouldn't be good for either person there. You might be, you know, making the other person worse, and they reckon you, you know, it's like, you know, the blind leading the blind in the end.
Well, say now. Let me just bring Joe in as well. Joe, hi, how are you?
I'm not too bad, Niall. Good afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, Nuala makes good points. You know, we change anyway, but as long as we change together, that's okay. But if some one person changes differently, be it, you know, depression, alcohol, whatever it is, you know, in this case it's bipolar, that sometimes the other person just can't handle it.
Yeah, well, look, Niall, in relation to that, like, you know, a person with bipolar, they can have a very split personality, you know, and they can have
episodes.
Their own ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I know a lot of people, I suffer with my nerves myself, but, you know, I can have good days and bad days. But I suppose, look, there does come a time that if things did get out of control, they have to draw a line, like, you know, because it could, the worst thing that could happen in the case of an episode like that is if the person starts getting violent or aggressive or even attempt to kill the person, you know, which could happen easily because you see it with marriages over the years, you know. There's always, when it comes to a certain amount of situations where violence gets in, it gets out of control, there has to be a line drawn. But of course, you know, I understand that, you know, she probably does care for that husband, for that person and all this stuff. But, you know, you have to draw the line too, I suppose, if your man is becoming a burden to her, or just say, for instance, if she was in the situation. You have to draw the line, I suppose, really, Niall. You know, that's the way I look at it. Like, but it varies.
So how do you draw the line? Do you set a date in the sand somewhere and say, well, look, if they're not any better, with all the help I'm giving them and all the support I'm giving them, if they're not any better by such and such a time, that's it, I'm gone, I'm out of here.
Yeah, well, Luke, yeah, that would be a fair thing, Niall. Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. Mm. Because you can only, just for instance, if there's kids involved, which there probably is, with a lot of the cases like that, you only can go so far, really. Like, you know,
and it can be difficult, as I said, with the friend that I had who used to come home and find his wife on the kitchen floor drunk. You know, there was a limit.
Well, yeah.
There's a limit to how much you can take. And I know people who will say, "Oh, you know, if your husband or wife becomes an alcoholic, you never leave them. That's a terrible, shocking thing to do. You should support them and stick with them through sickness and in health." Because they say alcoholism is a sickness, but in saying that, there's a limit to what you can take. You can't live your life with an alcoholic. You just can't.
Oh, well, no, certainly not. And look at the amount of broken marriages and broken affairs that have happened over the years where alcohol is concerned. You see, alcohol is the last resort, really, because if you start going into a relationship where somebody is drunk and they're completely oblivious to what they're doing. You have to kind of put a stop to that because, you know, the consequences is not going to be good, like, you know, simple as that.
Stay there for a second, Joe. Thanks very much indeed. Or I appreciate it, Joe. Sorry. Let me go to Maureen. Maureen, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. How are you?
Well, go ahead, Maureen. Do you think you should stick with the, should she stick with him?
Well, she should stick with him for a little bit longer, I think. Mm-hmm. Look, I'll just give you a very quick rundown. I live with it. Mm. My mother left here before war broke out to go nursing in London. And she became a nurse all through the war. And she was quite badly injured when her hospital she was in was hit. But I began to notice when I came to, you know, the age of reason, about 10, 12,
yeah,
that there was something wrong with my mother. Now, she'd be great for months, and all of a sudden, she'd have these mood swings.
She probably had post-traumatic stress disorder after a war.
She could have had.
Yeah.
But as the time went on, so I reached about 17, and that was her first time that I actually took her. The mental health place was here in Skibbereen that time. So she was seen by psychiatrists, and they actually kept her in. So when she came home, she was fine again, and they had her on medication. But from that day on, you see, it was a matter of she'd be good and she'd be bad. And it was a matter of getting the medication changed and then trying to find something that suited. So eventually they found something that suited her. But to be honest, like when she died, as you would sit and think after, I began to think to myself, was my mother diagnosed wrong? I had a feeling that she had PTSD. She could have been bipolar as well by the way she was acting.
Mm.
And I did say to my father one time, I said, I mean, Dad, I said, you know, when I grow up, I'll move away. I said, if I'm not near you, how are you going to manage? I mean, I did say to him, would you put her away somewhere? So his answer was to me, he said, why would I do that? He said, we married each other for good or bad, but that's...
Okay, but and you know what? Sometimes that's really affectionate. And, you know, when somebody's with somebody 30 or 40 years, yeah. Look, at that stage, and, you know, earlier on, Nuala mentioned somebody with dementia, for example. You know, if you're with somebody with dementia, most likely you've been with them for a long time, because dementia usually hits people as they get a lot older. And at that point in your life, you know, you obviously have to deal with the good with the bad, right? Because you've been with them a long time. But if you're only married 5 or 6 years and you're still a young woman or still a young man, and somebody in your house or, you know, the person you're married to is either an alcoholic, a drug addict, and I'm not comparing all of these things, by the way, suffers greatly with depression, is manic, bipolar, and as she says, is impulsive, erratic, and sometimes reckless. And it's like dealing with a stranger when they're manic. I mean, that's not a nice life. When you think to yourself, you know, I, and this may sound reasonably selfish, right? But I only have one life, and I'm, you know, I'm fecked if I'm going to live my life miserable, dealing with somebody who makes my life miserable. And that's the way people feel.
I know it's the way people feel, but the point here is that it is not the other person's fault.
But that's irrelevant. That's like saying it's not the alcoholic's fault or it's not the drug addict's fault. You know what I mean? Like, realistically, there's nothing you can do.
But I'm talking about mental health. Yes, but it can hit anybody at any time.
Oh, I know. I'm well aware of it. And by the way, for most people, for the most part, they get medication, they seek help, and they manage it, and it works out okay for a lot of people, right? But for some people, it doesn't. Or some people just don't seek out the help they should get, for example, or they don't help themselves. You know what I mean?
Well, the problem is today, too, now, is that the help isn't there. Not like that. It was back in the day. When I was going through my own mother, the help was there. The help is not there today.
Mm.
So it seems you have to try and find every avenue. And as that other lady was saying before about changing medication, sometimes that you have to do that. You have to keep on changing till eventually there is something there that is going to work. And there, I know a person, I've known him since I was a child, and God help us, he grew up and he's bipolar as well. He actually lives next door to me. And he goes and he has to get medication changed every so often. But I mean, he was out there and he does his business and that, and he seems okay. But he has his up and down days. Mm. But I think, you see, that in today's society, that it's whatever the slightest thing, it can only be the slightest thing, I'm off. Instead of just giving it a chance. If it doesn't work for her, and they try every avenue and she doesn't want to stay, well, then that's up to her. I'm not saying do or don't. But all I know is that I would be doing what I could. And I'd be fighting for the help and I'd be demanding that they get it.
See, Joe, Maureen says nowadays marriage seems to... Okay, well, hang on, Joe. Marriage is disposable as far as Maureen is concerned nowadays.
It seems to be.
Yeah. And people leave too quickly. Stick with it, she's saying, Joe. But you're kind of saying there has to get to a point where you have to go.
Yeah, look, I understand very well what Maureen is saying. And look, she does make good points, And I suppose they could do that. But, you know, at the end of the day, if it just say, for instance, it does get violent, you know, it does get to a situation where one of the person ends up, you know, killing one another or something like that.
Yeah, at least, violent. Some punch the head off each other, yeah.
Yeah, there has to be a line drawn there, like, you know, but... Look. I suppose you can only do what you can do, but you have to be very, very cautious too in the situation, what the circumstances could arise like. You know.
All right. Well, stay there, Maureen. Thank you, Joe, for that. Stay there, Maureen. Let me go to Owen as well. Owen, hi. How are you?
Very good, Niall. How are you, boy? You well?
I'm good, Owen. You heard Maureen. She's saying that, you know, people treat marriage a bit disposable nowadays, as being disposable, i.e., you know, as soon as the first thing goes wrong, they're out the door. But I mean, realistically, you only have one life and you want to make your life happy, and particularly if you're young. So what advice would you give to this woman?
Well, I'd have to agree with a few of the points there that everyone made. But for me, I think the line in the sand would have to be violence, particularly for a woman. I sound sexist now, but if my own wife got violent with me, I'd only be laughing at her. But if I was to get violent with her, there'd be a real possibility of injury. So you have to be realistic about this.
Mm.
And Maureen made a very, very good point there. when we were younger, there was hundreds, there was nearly 1,000 psychiatric beds available in County Cork, and there's less than, there's about 50, no? The help isn't there. They changed it to medication in the community. Mm. And there is times when people are very, very ill, and they're going looking for help, and they actually need overnight 24 care.
We over-medicate these days. Medication and antidepressants, et cetera, is not always the answer. Because the problem with medication is, it's a well-known fact, and the best doctors in the world tell you, medication doesn't cure anything. All it does is help with the symptoms. And
hard to get right, mate.
Absolutely. And if you medicate somebody and it masks the symptoms, well, then you're never going to deal with the problem. So that's, I mean, you know, when you had a young girl from the Irish Examiner, a reporter went to something like 19 doctors, I think, and the story goes back about 8 years ago, and all 19 doctors, she pretended she was depressed. She wasn't. She just pretended she was. But all 19 doctors prescribed antidepressants, even though they didn't know her. They had no recollection. They hadn't got her on, you know, on their files or anything, but they all prescribed antidepressants. Not one of them recommended she go to talk therapy. So what I'm saying is, you know, we're over-medicating. And getting it
absolutely
wrong.
Absolutely have to agree with that. Mm. Now, absolutely. And even the best psychiatrists would say to you, they're not able to get the medication right. They're calling people back in, they're chopping and changing it. And something that nobody's mentioned now, it's very disturbing that so many people are driving around the place in cars and trucks and things like that.
Oh yeah,
like
off their head on medication. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know.
Whereas if you have two wine gums, you're over the limit. But there's others driving now with handfuls of antidepressants. And
well, there is a warning on the box that'll tell you not to drive, but people ignore that. Yeah.
Correct. And I'd say even a lot of the guards in the checkpoints are probably taking antidepressants themselves as well, like, you know. Hmm. But if somebody's suicidal, should they be driving?
No. They shouldn't.
There you go.
No,
they shouldn't. And if their spouse goes to the guard or goes to the mental health hospital with their spouse and says, this guy needs to be sectioned, he's off his head. It's insane that there isn't a bed available for him. And
but that's because we became all politically correct about 20 years ago. And we stopped, obviously, incarcerating people because they were mentally insane or whatever word we used in those days, right? Or insane or mad. Was probably a better word that we used to use. So we stopped.
Dangerous might be a better word now.
Yeah, well, but we stopped doing it, but we went to the other extreme where we didn't give people the help and the support they needed. So what I'm, okay, so getting back to this particular girl, like the email does concern me, and I'm going to say this to both you and Maureen. It concerns me in the fact that it does look like she's done everything. You know what I mean? She's been with her husband for 6 years, so she's clearly very young. And 2 years ago he was diagnosed, which clearly means before that he obviously had a problem because obviously he wouldn't have went to get diagnosed otherwise. But, you know, when she says he's become withdrawn, irritable, and sometimes shuts her out completely, when he's manic, it feels like I'm dealing with a stranger, impulsive, erratic, and sometimes reckless. Now, reckless could mean anything. It could mean he's drinking too much, he's gambling, he's doing something wrong. So that's what reckless
means. Driving like a lunatic.
Yeah, or driving like a lunatic, or whatever. I mean, if you're young and you see no life ahead of you apart from living with somebody who's treating you badly, maybe shutting you out and behaving erratic and recklessly, that's not a good future for you, is it?
Well, no, look, this is the thing. There's something going to have to change. The system is not working. And what I would suggest to that girl who sent the email in is she's going to have to get her own help, like a counselling or a psychiatrist, because she is ridden with guilt about this relationship and she needs professional help to walk away from that. And it may well be the best thing. Or it might be that her husband isn't getting good treatment. But she is going to have to make that decision herself, and to do it, she needs help to reach this decision. And I think a trained professional like a psychiatrist or a counsellor is her best bet.
All right, thank you for that, Owen. Let me go to John. Stay there, Maureen, please. John, hi, how are you?
I'm not so bad, yourself?
Good. John, you know, everybody's been real nice here today. You know what I mean? Everybody's saying, stick with it, stick with it, stick with it. But we're not living in that situation.
No, you're not. But at the same time, look, I have some experience in this with friends of mine, right? I know one situation where obviously this guy, I don't know, was he getting disillusioned with the knowledge or what, but to me, there didn't seem to be anything wrong with this lovely girl and everything, the whole lot, three kids. And she was diagnosed with breast cancer, and the minute she gave him the news, he said, "That's it, I'm out of here." He walked out the next day. Mm. Now, what would you do in a situation like that?
Well, that's horrible. That's just callous, isn't it?
Well, all I can say is, look, I haven't got a sister, but if it was my sister, he'd probably be in intensive care. It's such a callous thing to do, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I mean...
That's a different situation completely. That's something completely out of somebody's control. You could argue that, you know, depression or bipolar, they're manageable, provided you're willing to go out and seek the help.
I think personally myself that he just couldn't handle the diagnosis. And he said, look, I'm leaving now, rather than get stuck into this and having to go along with it. He just couldn't be bothered standing by the girl. Mm. That's my reading of the situation. Now, I was also involved in a friend of mine there. She was very unwell, and her own family didn't even seem to get a message like what the hell was going on. And it made several attempts to take her life and ended up inside a psychiatric unit, which I used to go up regularly to see her, right? And eventually, nothing seemed to be done. And there was a time they came in that people were saying that should she be put away full time. So I wasn't going to give up on it. So she went up to see the psychiatrist one day, anyway, and I went into the office. Now, it wasn't a family member, just a friend of the person. And the psychiatrist asked me who I was, and she said, "You're not a member of the family." I said, "No, I'm not." And she wanted me to leave the office. No, I wouldn't leave. And she was still a bit remonstrating with me. So I said, "I'll tell you what, no, here it is, I lay on the line too, right? If you don't get this sorted, no," I said, "medication, cognitive behavioral therapy, whatever you have to do, and turn this girl around, this girl will take an overdose, slash her wrist, I'll be pulled out of the river, and I am holding you directly responsible," I said, "for this, and I will go on every radio station and say, I look for the help for this person, and you turn your back. I'm not leaving this office," I said, "until I get a guarantee." And there was a case conference on the back of that, called by all the top people in the mental institution, right? And the person was there themselves, the girl, and they came up with a new type of medication. They tried it, and lo and behold, it worked. And between that and the talk therapy, that girl is now in a relationship and as happy as Larry today.
Yes, people can be fixed, if that's the word you want to use. And, you know, and for her, maybe she feels she's come to a point where she's tried everything. It's been going on, obviously, for years. I mean, John, it can be very difficult to live with somebody. You know, we haven't done it, you haven't done it, I haven't done it. But it can be very difficult to live with someone, you know, who is making your life extremely difficult. And she talks about she's going around the house walking on eggshells, just waiting for him to, you know, to go again. You know what I mean? That's difficult.
Obviously, this didn't happen like from day one. It's only with the last recent 2 years or whatever that this is after kicking in. But I still wouldn't be putting a time limit on it. When is she going to get out the gap? I would stick with it another while, because God forbid...
But what's another while? Do you give it another 2 years? Do you give it another 4 years while you're getting older and more depressed dealing with it?
I would exhaust all possibilities, through this. And as one of the callers made it in the about past, in the past week, to lock people up for which would be clinical depression, and they were left away for life, to rot inside an institution, which is appalling. But the problem is now, again, which has been come up here, there's people driving cars, and lorries and buses, and they're on high medication, really, and they shouldn't be even driving or walking with machinery, whatever.
Okay. I get that. That's a separate topic, and we will do that again someday.
Yeah, but the thing is that the bottom line is there's people now walking around the community, right, very unwell. The state of the mental health in this country, they talk about the HSE and the physical...
I'm not going to disagree with that, but that's not her fault.
I know, but as I'm saying, she needs to exhaust all possibilities, right? And I don't know, is there any extended family that can help her or whatever? But I wouldn't be giving up just yet.
Okay, well, do me a favour. Maureen and John, please stay there, because I want to go to Tara and Angela, who have a slightly different view of this. Tara, hi, how are you?
Hi, Niall. How are things?
Good. Now, I don't know if you've heard the email, Tara. You know, I mean, she's tried everything. She's at a point now where he's erratic, impulsive, sometimes reckless. She's walking on eggshells. And her life is just, she said her life is just miserable. She's tried everything.
I completely know what she's going through because I suspect my ex from around 10 years ago had bipolar. And I know his GP wants him to go to a psychiatrist for a diagnosis because he too suspected that he was bipolar. He certainly exhibited all the signs. So I know what that's like to be constantly walking on eggshells. Your life revolves around not triggering an episode. To be honest, in my situation, life became so unbearable. I was with him for just over a year and a half. We weren't married, rather that, just dating. When I say it took me a couple of years to recover from the trauma of life with him, I'm not even exaggerating. And unless you've been through it personally, you cannot understand what it's like. Her friends know the full story. They've likely seen what he's like. There's a reason they're recommending she leaves. It's very easy to say, oh, give him a chance. He's had 2 years to work on this and to try and get on the right treatment and the right medication. I know that takes time, but he's also had this condition longer than 2 years.
Yeah.
So even though he's been diagnosed with 2 years, the wife has, by the sounds of it, spent many more years supporting him and being on the receiving end of God knows what kind of suffering. It's now his responsibility to try and get this condition under control. I get the impression as well that she wants to help him more than he wants to help himself. And usually that's the case. It's the partner that wants to help them more than the person wants to help themselves. And I remember chatting with a man who was out of a 20-year relationship with a woman that had bipolar, and she was refusing to take her medication. Now, I don't know if the man in this particular story, if he's refusing to take his medication or if he is on medication, but the guy that I was speaking to, he was worn down, he was burned out, he's at his wit's end because the woman didn't want to help herself. He wanted it, but she didn't. And it sounds like a similar case here. And I think the very fact that this woman is asking if she should leave, to me, is a sign that her gut is telling her to leave. And I would strongly suggest that she follows that feeling. Because when that woman leaves that marriage and she's not walking on eggshells anymore, if she's not careful, the exhaustion and the burnout is going to hit her like a truck. Because right now she's in fight or flight. She needs to look after herself because it's only so long that your body can continue in that fight or flight mode. She's going to burn out if she's not careful. And it pisses me off when I hear people equating bipolar to breast cancer and menopause. They're nothing alike. They're nothing alike. And people with no experience of life with someone with such an unpredictable disorder.
Well, they can be seriously debilitating. No, I disagree, Trot. They do.
Certainly not breast cancer, but I would disagree, Tara, to an extent that menopause, depending on how serious it is for a woman on medication or, you know, if she's on HRT or whatever it happens to be, menopause for some women can have dramatic mood changes, and it can play havoc with their mind in the fact that they don't even know how they're behaving sometimes. It can be similar in a sense to live. I mean, men can tend to get disregarded in this whole argument around menopause. Now, I don't want to get into it too deeply. We can do it another day. But for some men to live with a woman who is very menopausal and her mood changes dramatically and she treats him badly, and I've seen articles where men are told, oh look, you just have to kind of live with it. Nobody should have to live with bad behaviour. Nobody should have to live with being treated badly by anybody, their wife, their daughter, their son, or whatever it is. So in saying that, Tara, you know, somebody with bipolar, I'm not saying it's the same, but the devastating effect it can have on a partner is equally as bad, or can be equally as bad.
Absolutely leave, because the marriage vows may say in sickness and in health. In this case, or in the case of a man living with a woman who is erratic as a result of menopause, the partner has already kept their vow by supporting them immensely during their sickness. Now it's the responsibility of the other partner to uphold the health part of the vow. It's like in this particular situation with the woman. Let me finish. It is in this particular situation with the woman and who is living with the man with bipolar. It's now his turn to honour the health part by making more of an effort to look after
himself. But
if he
can't help himself,
how
can he do that? If he could help himself in the first place, obviously he would do it. Obviously he can.
No, hold on. Obviously he wouldn't, John. You're saying obviously. How do we know Tara's right? You know, she does sound like she's being very supportive. You know, he may not be doing everything to help himself. And if you want to use the same analogy Tara's using or in relation to menopause, if you were with a woman out at menopause and she decided she didn't want to do anything about it and not go to a doctor or not take medication that may be able to help that problem, and you're there dealing with it, isn't it? If that's what you want to say.
There's many a person out there that go through severe symptoms with menopause, right? And the husbands don't walk out the door. When the breast cancer and all
some
the treatment that goes with
some
that
do.
And the trauma that goes with that, apart from the case I gave you there, most men stand by their wives, right?
Well, good men are understandable when it comes to menopause and understand how menopause works. And I know we shouldn't be even talking about it because it's not the same thing, but I understand the effect it can have on a marriage is possibly the same thing. But the point that Tara's making is, if you're, and going back to the argument of the menopause, if you're a supportive husband in menopause, but your other half doesn't want to do anything about it and things are just getting bad to worse, well then, you know, that's not your fault. You've tried everything. Same way as Tara is saying, maybe she's tried everything. Maybe she's been supportive of this guy and he's just not doing what he should be doing or playing his role in trying to make himself better. Yeah, hang on for a second. Maureen, is Tara right?
Well, she is, in to a certain extent.
But you still would do it. You still wouldn't leave.
But again, now you're going back to it. Look, we've heard of cases. There's been people have arrived at psychiatric units, absolutely suicidal. Those people have been turned away. Now, Apple are paying back the $13 billion. I think every amount, every bit of that money should be taken and put into every, divided equally into the health service, but especially into the mental health areas.
I wouldn't give that money to Stephen Donnelly. He'd just build 4 hospitals with it.
Yeah, but by right, for the children who are bent with scoliosis, who can't breathe.
By the way, I don't want to talk about that money today, and I'll tell you why, right? Yeah. There's a huge, we can do a whole topic on it if you want, but there's a bit of a myth around the 13, it's actually nearly 14 billion, to be honest with you. There's a bit of a myth around it. Ireland might not necessarily get very much of that money. You do understand that other countries within the EU can make a claim on that money because Apple operate resellers and retailers in those countries who are now, all those countries will be owed tax. So what I'm saying is that money will go into an escrow account over the next few months. Probably, it'll probably be January by the time we actually get it. And then we have to keep it for a period of time and other countries can then make a claim on that money. We're only collecting it. We're only responsible for, when it comes to corporation tax, we're only responsible for collecting it. So other countries can make a claim on that because Apple operates out of other countries too. So we could end up with $1 billion out of it. We might not end up with $13 billion. I don't know. Nobody knows.
Yeah, but you know that those traders up there have that earmarked for something. Yeah.
By the way, can I also say on a side note, I believe it's really bad for Ireland that Apple lost that case. And as much as I believe it's absolute corporate greed that they weren't paying the right amount of tax, it's not good for Ireland because it's not good for foreign investments because it's going to scare other companies now coming into Ireland because they now know that the EU were in control of Irish taxes, not Ireland. Anyway,
but on top of that, look at the amount of money they left this country. What was it, $350 million? Again, over there to Zelensky.
Okay.
Look what that money would have done to the health service, and especially for mental health, because it's not the health for
With the greatest respect to the two of you, I'm sorry, I don't think Tara agrees with that either. Money is not going to fix people's health in this country. Money is not the issue. That we spend more money on health per head of population than probably most countries within Europe. Our biggest problem is administration and staffing. We don't have enough people working in the health sector and we can't get them to work because we're not paying them enough money. But we have plenty of money. Ireland is a very, very wealthy country for the size of the country and the population. We are a wealthy country.
But if the health service is not addressed, well, then more people are going to die.
Let's kick Stephen Donnelly out of a job and get somebody in who knows what they're doing. Getting back to the question is, so Maureen, you heard Tara. And I'm going to need to come to Angela in a second. What point do you cut the cord? Or do you ever cut it?
Well.
Ah, come on,
look,
Maureen.
As I said, I'd give it another shot.
How long? How long? You're just, like, if you're her mate and she's ringing you up and going, Maureen, I'm dealing with this now 3 or 4 years, 5 years, whatever. She's married to him 6 years. I'm dealing with this years. He's been diagnosed 2 years ago. I can't deal with it anymore. He's reckless.
Well,
you know, he's impulsive. He's erratic. He's bringing me down. I feel so depressed. What advice would you say to her?
Well,
just keep going.
No, of course, I would say you need to go and see somebody yourself. Either a psychiatrist or his psychiatrist or maybe a psychologist.
Okay, so you're never going to tell her to leave.
That's normally what people do. Just put it to a stranger. Somebody who's trained in that field.
Yeah, sorry, hang on, John. Tara, you would tell them to cut the cord at some point, yeah?
I'm reluctant to say give the person a specific deadline, as in like tell the wife to give the husband a specific deadline, because realistically,
but you have to put a deadline. I was reading about this, and I was an expert psychologist, and he was talking about people living with people with depression, right? And they said, and this is what this expert said, is you can keep pontificating or procrastinating, should I say, and saying, oh, should I give it another month or two? Oh, should I give it another month or two? Oh, they're going to get better. Hopefully they're going to get better. And you just keep going and going and going and get worse.
That there has to be,
and they say, put a date on it. And if they don't get somewhat better.
You can't set that in stone.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, you can. You can turn around and say, okay, next, you know, I don't know, next March, if there's no sign of improvement or they're not willing to help themselves by next March, I'm out.
Every case is different. You can't.
I'm just saying that's what he said. I'm only telling you that's what they say. That's what the expert said.
Well, you didn't say what they really were like.
Yes, I do.
My concern here with this man is that we don't know what his condition. I know she has alluded to him being erratic, but what I'm concerned about, if his condition involves him being prone to bursts of rage, like my ex was prone to bursts of rage, he would go silent for an hour or two, and then like the rage and the aggression would come to the fore about an hour or two later. We don't know in this particular situation if a threat like, okay, I'm giving you till next March, that might be a trigger for a rage episode. You know, so I would just be very worried for her if she... Now, look, it might be the incentive he needs to cop himself on and start pushing. Because it sounds like he's using her tolerance as a crutch, that she's putting up with it, so that's why things
you
aren't changing.
You can't say
that. I did say we don't know anything about the man. I'm just like, yeah. I'm just saying that there's a possibility that he's using her tolerance as a crutch, because he hasn't. He's had 2 years, and things haven't changed for her. So...
It's a difficult relationship, because she says his mental illness takes up so much space in our relationship. I'm constantly walking on eggshells, never knowing when the next episode will hit. When he's manic, it feels like I'm dealing with a stranger, impulsive, erratic, and sometimes reckless. Stay there for a second. Let me just go to Angela as well. Angela, hi.
Hi, Niall. How are you?
Good.
I think she needs to go. You know, it's like...
Would you put a time limit on Angela?
Yeah, now.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
Now.
Yeah.
Because the thing... John, please, just let me talk, okay? The thing is, everyone seems to be talking about his mental health, his mental illness, his disease, what he has. What about what she's going through? What about what she has to put up with for 24 hours a day? What kind of a life has it been for her? What kind of a life is she having? You know, I saw somebody put up there that if she leaves and something happens to him, will she ever forgive herself? If she doesn't leave and something happens to her, have you thought about that? If she doesn't leave, if she stays and it gets so manic and so aggressive, because this is what can happen with bipolar, with medication, if they're not taking their medication and that. This is what can happen. And what if something happens to her? What if he knocks her one day and knocks her so hard that she isn't here anymore? Would you still be saying the same thing?
But that hasn't come up today. There's been no evidence of physical abuse.
She seems to really, really care for the man. I do get the impression that she wouldn't say that publicly if, you know, she has alluded to erratic behaviour and to reckless behaviour. She hasn't, but I think she's been very generous in the way she's describing his symptoms. She obviously cares for the man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you must remember this is only happening with the last 2 years.
He said diagnosed in the last two years.
John, I'm going to give you a slight example of this. It's nowhere near it in one way. But you were talking about cancer. Would a man leaving a woman who has breast cancer, right? In my heart and my soul, I truly believe that my husband left me because I couldn't have kids after we got married. And you know what? That was his decision. I'm upset about it. I think he's happy now. And if he is, he's happy. But if he wasn't happy to stay with someone who couldn't have kids, would you have told him to stick it out?
Well, I mean, the very fact, I mean, that he left, it wasn't your fault that you couldn't conceive, right?
No.
Like, does that mean that you're cursed forever and so, like, I mean, that, look, oh, sorry, Angela, you're my wife, You can't provide a child for me, like, so it doesn't matter how much I care about you, like, I mean, you can't give me a child, like, so I'm out the gap and I'll get someone. That's selfish, like.
But is that, no, it's, to me it's not. I forgive him if that's what it is. But to me, that's nearly the same thing. We were together for 10 years before he left, okay? With this, how long is she meant to stay with someone if she is that unhappy? How long?
Maureen, I keep asking you this question and you won't answer it. You know?
Say again?
I keep asking you the same question and you won't answer it. How long, at what point do you cut the cord? Angela's saying cut it now.
But you know, every case is different now.
I know, but I'm only going by what we're reading. So, I mean, Maureen, Angela's saying cut the cord. Make yourself happy. Life, you only get one shot at life, don't you?
Yeah.
Why would you want to be in a miserable situation?
Everybody only gets one shot at life. So does a man suffering with bipolar.
I mean, Maureen, life. I don't want to make it personal, but you finished up with your husband because I think, if I remember rightly, was it an affair?
Yeah.
Okay. So you were unhappy. You weren't going to stay with a man who was, you know, unfaithful to you. So you cut the cord. I know it's a different situation. What I'm saying is you made yourself happy by doing that. Is that not her duty to make herself happy too?
There's a chasm of...
No, hang on. Let Maureen respond to that because obviously I brought Maureen.
If it's getting really bad for her, she can always have him sectioned. She can always put him into a residential area or a setting for as long as it takes and see if that works. If nothing else works, she gives him an ultimatum. I'm gone.
Sorry.
Or I have to walk away. But okay. don't do it without going down every road.
The difference is between, like, me and Marlene's history, like, and look, she'd been very upfront. And
yes, she has. She spoke about
it
before, yeah.
But so we know that, right? And then she repeated it again today. But that was because of an unfair...
But it's still a circumstance within a marriage that makes you unhappy. That's the point I'm making, right?
It is, yeah. But, I mean, you could see how that could bring something to an end. But a person getting unwell, either male or the female, in the relationship, like, I mean, there's a chasm of difference between that and a person having a full-blown affair.
I'm looking here, Angela. There's a message here that said, how callous is Angela? Mind you, I was in a similar situation many years ago. I was with a woman and eventually got away from her because constantly, every time I told her I was going to leave her unless she changed, she told me she'd kill herself.
It's a horrible situation to be in, and I had that with my ex as well.
Terrible.
That's why, and you know, that's why I'm kind of against the idea of telling the person, right, I'm giving you 6 months, because like that, they might come out with a threat like that, or they might be, you know, pulled to a first degree.
You can't be responsible for somebody else. I mean, and again, in the paper that I read that I was talking to you earlier on about, it does mention that there was a case study done on a woman who was leaving his wife. And she said, if you leave me, I'll kill myself. And the experts say, never, ever accept that threat from anybody. If you want to leave somebody, leave somebody.
You walk away from that threat.
You can't be responsible for that.
Now, can I just say, the other thing about this is, she is so unhappy right now, okay? Does she go down the line of having an affair? Is this what's going to happen? That she finds somebody else? These are all if, but, and what.
I understand people have problems, lads and ladies, but I would hate to live in a marriage or a situation where you're literally walking around the house on eggshells and your partner is nasty to you or not, you know, unkind or reckless or erratic or impulsive or, you know, acting like a lunatic all the time. I would hate to live in that situation.
Like, Niall, that's what happened to me because I caught him having the affair. And for 6 weeks, I had forgiven him. I said we'd work on it. And for 6 weeks, I didn't even want to say boo to him in case he left. Now, he did end up leaving. But I did. It was horrible. That was only 6 weeks. Mm. It was just... And I'm sorry the way I'm going to say this now. It's an absolute mind fuck. That is what it is. Because you're just waiting for them to snap. You're just waiting for them to do something. You cannot live. And someone can call me callous. I don't care. I've been in these kind of situations. And it is absolutely detrimental to your own health. And at the end of the day, that's what you have to think of.
You have to think of your own health as well. You can't put a timeline on this. And I'm sorry to say this. I can't see any psychiatrist or any psychologist that will help with this. Because all you're going to do is go, sit there, explain what's going on. And what are they going to say to you? Oh, just, you know, I think you should do this. I think, no, you're not living in that situation. You have to listen. And the one thing I will tell you is, and Tara will back me up on this, by God, there is nothing like a woman's gut feeling. And her gut feeling now is that she should walk away.
On that note, I'm going to have to wrap it. Listen, thank you very much indeed, John, Tara, Angela, Maureen. A lot of people, by the way, saying similar things as well. Somebody else says she has to leave. It's being selfish doesn't mean it's the wrong choice. So somebody else, in other words, it can be the right choice, even though it seems selfish. Certain person says her husband was diagnosed 3 years ago, but he has it for many years, including when she met her future husband. What changed? Why did he get worse? Is she helping or making it worse? Jessica says, before I would have said that it's her husband's wife, you made the vows, but now I'd say I'm on the fence of you have one life and that's it. If he has become difficult, you should stay away from him for any reasons you have to be selfish in this world. Sometimes that's the cruel fact. Why stay in a relationship that you're not happy in anymore, Jessica? Jessica, you've got a point. You don't stay in a relationship that you're not really happy with anymore. Thomas says, by the way, in sickness and in health, till death do us part. Thomas, I know that's what you say during when you're getting married, but it's not that simple, really, is it? Life isn't that simple. I wish it was. It'd be great, wouldn't it? Ireland, someone else in Ireland on X, that's a good handle, isn't it? Someone else in Ireland. Depending on the severity of the illness, in most cases it could be managed well with meds, but for some who live Motus L'Oreal, I'm worth it. Oh yeah, the motto of L'Oreal. I'm worth it. Thought as marriage is something more than walking in clouds is unacceptable. However, in heavy cases, it is hard to cope. Yeah, look, I think for a lot of people, you know, living with somebody who is either suffering from bipolar, depression, or, as somebody mentioned earlier on, menopause, and it is fair to bring it into it, it's a good analogy, can be very difficult. And I think the answer is clear here from what we've heard today from most people. If the person is willing to help themselves, be it depression, be it menopause, be it bipolar, if they're going to take medication, if they're going to seek help, no matter what the problem is in a marriage, by the way, if the person is going to seek help to address the problem, rather than ignoring it and saying you need to put up with it, well, then it's time to go. Do you understand what I'm saying? Or other way around, then it's not time to go, then stick with it. But if they're going to ignore it and basically blame you and say, look, I've got depression, I've got bipolar, I've got menopause, whatever it is that they're suffering from, and you just have to deal with it. And look, it's not my fault. If they have that attitude towards it, well then, you need to get out of there. Because that's not going to change. Somebody giving out that we're comparing menopause to bipolar. We're not comparing menopause to bipolar. We're comparing the fact that it can be difficult to live with someone in those circumstances. And it can. Of course it can. Because, you know, depending on how bad, for a lot of women, by the way, you know, menopause isn't that difficult. But for some, it's dramatic. Dramatic, where they can have serious mood changes, lack of energy, all those kind of things. And that can affect a relationship. There's no doubt about it. But as long as the person who has it is willing to do something about it, because there is help available, well, then that's fine. Well, then you work with them. But if the person's not, well, then you don't work with them. Same goes with bipolar, same goes with depression. If they're willing to do something, you know, to fix themselves and help themselves while you're supporting them, well, then well and good, stick with it. But if they're not, and it's getting worse, you've got one life. Angela says, cut the cord. Anyway, listen, thank you to everybody who supported us today and everybody who listened to the show. I do apologise the WhatsApp wasn't working today. We will have it fixed by the end of the day. It's just a small, minor problem, but however, we will have it sorted by the end of the day. Don't forget, by the way, please support the show. It's really important. We have no other way of funding this show. By the way, to the arsehole who emails us on a daily basis, we know who you are, by the way, you tick. And I won't tell you how we know, but we do know who you are. You keep changing your name and your email address, by the way. That doesn't make any difference, right? You're an arsehole. You know who you are. Thank you to everybody who supports us. Small amounts, donations, and subscriptions They all help. Absolutely. So please do go to our website, nileboylan.com. So it's nileboylan.com. Go to the website and do support us and help us to continue to provide this platform for every type of topic, be it a news topic or indeed today, a social dilemma of a description. So please support us. Go to the website. We cannot continue without your support. Even if it's a small once-off donation, you can do that right now on the website. If you want to subscribe once a month and you can watch all the previous episodes, including interviews that we do that we don't stream live, they're all on the website. Like next week, I'm talking to, I won't tell you, but it'll be a really good interview. It's two people. They're from the past, but they're very much in the news now. So I won't tell you who they are. But we'll be doing that interview next week. And that will be on the website. And you'll have to subscribe. Because we have to have some way of encouraging people, you know, to pay us. Because we can't, we're not a charity. We can't do it for free. Because unfortunately, we have our own jobs to do as well. And, you know, we do this, I suppose at the moment, as a hobby. Because we don't get paid for it. But if we can cover our costs, we're delighted to do it. So please support us by going to the website, nileboylan.com. I should talk to you again tomorrow, same time. Until then, have a great day.
The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan podcast. Listen live on Facebook, YouTube, and all the usual live stream services. To get in touch, just WhatsApp or text 085-100-2255. The Niall Boylan podcast. They told me to shut up. Available for download from all your usual platforms.